It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Confidence in the scientific community is in decline among adults in our country. That polling from NORC at the University of Chicago and the Associated Press, we explore what the purpose of scientific education should be like with a longtime science educator who joins us. And you can join the conversation at any point, calling in with a question, sharing your viewpoint, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John Rudolph is a distinguished professor of science education at UW-Madison School of Education, author of Why We Teach Science and Why We Should. John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks so much, Kate. Very glad to be here.
You say the way Americans teach science in K-12 schools is largely ineffective. What are those biggest myths associated with how we teach science?
Yeah, what we've been focusing on more recently is just this idea that we need to teach students the content, the disciplinary content, the knowledge, the sort of problem solving skills. So I guess the three biggest myths are that science education is primarily to prepare students for these science related careers. We hear this all the time with getting students in the STEM pipeline.
There's a pipeline. There's a pipeline, John Rudolph.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the biggest myth, I think, of all of them. But then the other things that teachers will say, or the public will say, is that, well, the facts of science are useful. It's utilitarian. It helps people in their daily lives, in their roles as citizens. That's another one that you really need to look at a little more carefully. And the third one is this belief that science education helps students develop critical thinking skills, better thinking skills. Science is this epitome of rational thought. And if we have students do science, do more laboratory activities, that they'll somehow absorb this rational thinking and use it in their daily lives. Those are the big three that I see.
And this rational, better thinking, that apparently they don't absorb it. Like we really lose this information once we like memorize it, then it's gone, you found.
Yeah, I mean, so the fact, I mean, there's so much of what goes on in science classrooms is about getting students to memorize the stages of mitosis, or the parts of the cell, or the periodic table of the elements, and this kind of fact-based science teaching, which we've gravitated towards because of this emphasis on standardized assessments. And this will get students to do well on their tests and ACT scores and whatever. But it's not useful information. It's not information that people actually, number one, they don't remember it. Various studies have shown that nearly half of the content students learn in their science classes, they simply don't recall. And in many cases, if they do recall it, it's not obvious how they would actually use it in their daily lives. That's another big challenge.
Like, not even the physicians remember the basic science. I mean, that, people in the scientific community not being able to recall some of these things that they were taught in school.
Well, right. So those were two studies that were done at one at MIT with physics majors, another study done with medical students. These were people who were going to be scientists, and they found that about 60% of the content that they learned, they lost after not even 4 years of, they begin their studies by their senior year, they've already forgotten over half of it. But more damning is this studies by the National Science Foundation. They do these surveys every couple of years where they just survey public knowledge of science content. And we find that fewer than half the general public know, for example, that electrons are smaller than atoms. It's very basic scientific facts. And over a quarter of the public believes that the sun goes around the earth and not the earth around the sun, for example.
How does that make you feel?
Well, two things. One is that I guess the key, which got me thinking, was that these facts that we teach really don't matter that much for people's daily lives, that people go along with their lives very successfully And it doesn't really matter whether they think the sun goes around the earth or the earth goes around the sun. And so it made me rethink, well, what is the purpose of teaching science if it's not to get students or people to learn all these facts that don't seem to be very applicable to their daily lives?
We're talking about how and why Americans teach science in schools. We have John Rudolph, UW-Madison School of Education professor, and you can be part of the conversation. Your questions, your insights, welcome at 800-642-1234. John, what are the two goals or tiers, as you call them in the book, of teaching science in high school?
Yeah, so in the book, I look through sort of the commonly given purposes of teaching science. And these are things, you can really break them down into a science for culture argument, like teaching science to convey a sense of appreciation of the beauty of the natural world and the ability of human beings to have figured this all out. That's one. Science education for better thinking, this belief that science education leads to problem-solving skills, critical thinking skills that we just talked about. The science education for utility argument, that the facts of science are useful in daily life or for national economic growth and prosperity. And science education for democracy. This idea that in our increasing scientific and technological world, that citizens need to understand the basics of science in order to participate in the democratic process. And the tiers that you mentioned are essentially, we focus on a tier one, which is mostly about having the STEM pipeline argument, that we focus on thinking about preparing students for advanced courses in science, because we think that will lead to careers that will be prosperous for them and the nation. The tier two is sort of the science for general education, which we talk about, but we don't really emphasize. This is the notion, these are the science for democracy, science education for cultural appreciation, science education for better thinking arguments. And of the two, we pay lip service to both of these, but what we end up focusing on is this technical training argument, which is, we see it in school programs that have engineering courses and biotech courses and AP courses, because we want to prepare these students for their future careers or occupations.
Let's bring on a call, Rebecca in Manitowoc. Rebecca, hi. What would you like to say?
Yes, hi. Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make the comment that I agreed with what your guest is saying, because I went back to school in my 40s for a medical degree in physical therapy. And I have to tell you that 60% of my classes and the things I was learning was rote memorization. And you memorize body parts, you memorize muscles, bones, nerves. And after, you don't retain that information if you don't understand why you're memorizing it or what it's going to be used for. And once you get into the field, there's a lot you don't in your job that you were required to memorize. So there's a few things that could be changed in the way that we teach these subjects. And in fact, we could get rid of a lot of the things that we know someone doesn't need in their job, because I feel like universities take advantage of forcing people to pay for classes they don't need. And two, we could teach the why instead of teaching to the test. I feel like we teach to the test to pass people, but we don't teach the why. And the why is really what helps you retain it.
Rebecca, thank you so much. John, this speaks to so much in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Rebecca's right on target, I think. And the why, the teaching the why, I think, is so much more important than just focusing on the facts of science, the litany of things that we ask students to memorize. And students are good at that. They can memorize, they can get right answers, they can solve problems. But then if you follow up a few weeks later or ask them really, what do they really understand? You find that all they've done is memorize. And we call this surface learning. They learn for the test and they haven't developed a deep understanding. And that deep understanding comes from students understanding where that knowledge came from. Why do we believe what we believe? What's the evidence? And that's what I think an important goal of science education should be, is how do we know what we know? What's the basis of our scientific knowledge? Not just what are the facts that we've learned so far.
UW-Madison education professor John Rudolph's book is called Why We Teach Science and Why We Should, as we discuss the place of scientific principles and concepts in our lives, how they are taught in the classrooms. Call in with a question, share your comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how science curriculums could be reimagined to engage students in the complex connections between science and society, as opposed to memorizing the periodic table for a test. UW-Madison School of Education professor John Rudolph's latest book is called Why We Teach Science and Why We Should. And you can be part of the discussion on how science is taught. Call in with a question, share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. John, you question whether America needs more scientists. Does our country need more of them?
Yeah, so that's one of the biggest myths. And people have written about this in other places. And I try to bring this together in the book for this to address that technical training myth. And when you run the numbers, you look at, say, the beginning, like the incoming freshmen in high school across the nation. If that's 100% of students beginning secondary education at that point, then how many end up down the line in a science-related occupation or career or degree? And you find that about half those students by their late 20s will have earned a degree of any kind, let's say an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. And then of those degrees, only about 27% are in a science-related field. And this is a generous estimate, including things like all the health professions, nursing, agricultural and natural resources degrees, in addition to things like engineering and physics and molecular biology and things like that. And so that takes you down to about, if you have the 50% and then 27% are in science-related degree programs, that brings you down to about 13%, 14%. But only about half those students end up in science-related careers. There's an oversupply, actually, of a lot of the various science-related careers, which means that in the end, only about 7% of all those incoming freshmen end up in sort of that technical career path in a science-related field. And so that made me think, like, what is the science education for those other 93% of the students in our classes? And if we're just having them on this technical training path that's focused on the memorization of science content, the mastery of problems within a discipline, a lot of laboratory work, that's doing those students a disservice. And that's not the kind of science education we need for citizens.
Let's bring in Jared in Madison. Jared, what's your perspective?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just like to comment on this because I am a first generation college student, and I found that, am I doing well in high school in science and doing well in my undergraduate career at a learning university didn't really prepare me for research at a research university. And I found that those around me who were succeeding and flourishing had a background and socioeconomic status much higher than mine, which led them to a lot of connections and a lot of just cultural knowledge that I just simply didn't have access to. And if we're educating people for the pipeline, simple rote memorization doesn't really accomplish that whatsoever. And getting people into that sort of cultural aspect of science and even just how do you perform science on the day-to-day just isn't really covered by our scientific education.
I understand you work as a data analyst. Do you find that your preparation for that job relates to what you do in the day-to-day at work?
So I think my research experience really helped me in terms of just being able to learn independently and being able to adapt to the situation. Specifically, I work in biotech, so obviously it helps to know a little bit of biology.
Jared, thank you so much for your insights and for sharing about your experience. John, what do you make of Jared's story?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that the notion of sort of cultural understanding of science is an interesting point. It's more of a, he's suggesting a more liberal arts approach, that that science isn't just a technical field, that those facts give us everything we need in order to be successful, but there's a richer kind of learning that we might imagine that that looks at the place of science in society, how scientific knowledge emerged historically, and how that knowledge has shaped the world we see around us. And that's a kind of richer sort of understanding that I think citizens and future science workers and researchers could really benefit from.
A goal of science education is to teach students these general specific principles for what educators call scientific literacy. What do you find problematic about scientific literacy?
It's a chapter in the book that I look at the history of the concept of scientific literacy. And, you know, it emerged in right around the end of World War II, when there was a lot of concern on the part of scientists that the public didn't really understand what science was. And their worry back then was that the public saw science just as this technical field that could create these magical things like atomic weapons and radar and new innovative technologies, and that the public didn't understand sort of the ethos of science, the culture of science, the values of science. And so the idea of scientific literacy emerged around 1945 to help the public think about that. And over time, though, scientific literacy has been co-opted, and it's so appealing to just talk about scientific literacy without defining what we mean by it. And more recently, it's been measured by, like, the NSF science indicators that I mentioned earlier, by simply how much of the facts of science does the public know and remember. And that has become sort of the measure of scientific literacy, which is very, very different than the ideas that emerged in the post-war period about what kind of an appreciation of science the public should have. And so scientific literacy is this empty phrase that everybody says, oh, the public should be scientifically literate, but we don't ever say what we really mean by that. And it ends up defaulting to this, let's measure it by test scores.
UW-Madison School of Education, longtime professor John Rudolph's latest book, Why We Teach Science and Why We Should, 800-642-1234 to join in with your question. Let's go to Sean in Eau Claire now. Sean, hi.
I'd like to thank you for another great topic on WPR, and thank you for taking my call. This is such an interesting topic, and it can be a little confusing in ways, or difficult in ways of, you know, back in high school, I remember it was common for students to think, oh, why do I need to learn algebra? Why do I need to learn physical science? I'm never going to use it. Who cares about all this history that happened? But then as we grow through life, or at least for myself, I'm 50 years old now. I've changed careers multiple times and been successful. But I was in construction. I used algebra every day, and it was something that was very important. And then even science, and why do things evaporate? What happens? Why? Where's the chemical change happening here? Where at least you can draw some common sense conclusions. And then I also found that my interests have changed dramatically from the time I was 15, 16, 18 years old.
So a lot of changing and evolving, Sean, and then seeing science in different ways, John Rudolph.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't want to give the impression that science education isn't important, that the book isn't about that we should not teach science in schools. And it's the question of what are we teaching and for what goal are we teaching it and how are we teaching it? I mean, I think that's the key. And the thing that the caller is pointing out are the kinds of understandings that we want people to have about science, not just memorizing the various boiling points and melting points of substances, but understanding what's going on conceptually. What are the models of evaporation and condensation that do we have, are we teaching in such a way that students really understand what's going on and how that might impact their lives rather than just sort of rote learning for a test? And that's the main objection that I guess I'm trying to get across.
John Rudolph, Distinguished Professor of Science Education in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction at UW-Madison School of Education, examining how science classrooms could change and, along the way, how to rebuild public trust in the scientific community. As we explore this topic, you can be part of it. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 7 out of every 100 students will end up working in a science-related occupation. UW-Madison science education professor John Rudolph asked the question, then how much technical training do high school students really need? His latest book is called Why We Teach Science and Why We Should, and you can bring your perspective on science classrooms. Call in with a question, add comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John, you write about a city in Dane County that built a new high school with upgraded classrooms and technology, and you say the science department's goals on its website are disconnected from the courses that are offered. What is the disconnect going on?
Yeah, well, the if you look at the website of the science department, it lists the typical things you would see, arguments for science education. They say, oh, students will develop better thinking skills through science. It's important to create citizens who can make decisions on complex socioscientific issues. It's all the rhetoric that we find about why we teach science. But when you look at the program itself and the courses, it's very much geared toward the STEM pipeline. They have a number of courses in, there's a program, Project Lead the Way, which is about engineering, bioengineering and mechanical engineering. They've got biotech courses. And these appeal to the school board members and the community and many of the public policy makers who are making this argument about the STEM pipeline that, oh, this keeps us competitive. This keeps us able to compete with scientists in India and China and all that. And like you mentioned, the fact that so few students actually end up in these science-related careers makes it questionable whether or not this is the kind of program we really need for the public.
You also call advanced placement a forced march through a preordained subject. What about AP courses?
Yeah, so the AP courses are, and I'm not sure if I said that or quoted someone who had said that, but I think the focus is on covering the content. The idea is that supposedly the AP course mirrors what an introductory college course in chemistry or biology would look like. And so the goal is to get students to pass the AP exam at the end of the year. And mm-hmm. So there's definitely a focus on, and this has been a longstanding critique of AP courses, that it's very test focused and test driven. And in order to cover all that material and get the students to pass those exams, the kind of teaching that goes on is very much focused on sort of a rote memorization kind of an approach. You can't really take the time to explore concepts in depth. You can't really explore how various ideas in biology or physics historically have influenced the way we see the world in a deep way. And so this it's a credential-based system that really pleases everybody. The parents are happy because they can their students can get college credit, and they don't have to pay for that extra college course. The school district is happy because they feel like they're providing the service to the community. Students are happy if they pass the test. And so everybody's happy, but the knowledge that the students are learning isn't useful in a meaningful way. It becomes simply something that they just forget once they've accomplished the goal of passing that test.
Let's bring in Julie in Madison now. Julie, hi. What would you like to add?
I'm on the employer end of hiring new graduates for engineering entry level. What we find out of the teaching in the teaching universities is that the students lack independent thought and analytical skills as to how do I prove something is true or false? What's a quick way to test my hypothesis? The second defect in the educational system is that they cannot communicate what they do, find, and think to others in simple English.
Julie, thank you so much for sharing. And John Rudolph, how does that analysis, inform what you're finding?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what you would expect from the kind of traditional science education that we currently have. If students are passing their tests and moving along the steps of the course progression in science just by that surface kind of learning, then if somebody asks them to explain something in more accessible everyday terms, they're not able to translate that because they don't really understand it well. They don't understand it at a conceptual level that allows them to explain it to somebody who hasn't memorized the same things they've memorized. All they can do is spout the technical ideas that they've committed to their memory. And those analytical skills are exactly the kinds of things you'd like to see more of in science classes, but that's not what traditional science education really focuses on.
In terms of communication, Julie talked about explaining the science. And you say one goal of science education should be to build public trust in science. What do you mean?
Yeah, so that's a huge one. And when I first started writing the book, that was part of the motivation. Was I had been working with pre-service science teachers for 20 years at UW-Madison. And the students all came in. They come in with undergraduate degrees in the sciences. And one of the things that I try to do is to shift how they think about what science education is about. And as I began writing the book, it was during the time of all this disinformation and misinformation, which is a huge focus these days. And it's a worry, certainly, for society. And it became clear that if all information is seen as equal in a fact-based way, that we're just learning facts, and that somebody else's fact is just as good as another person's fact, that invites this kind of misinformation and disinformation. And so the focus on building trust is trying to get underneath those facts and to spend time in science classrooms exploring why do scientists believe what they believe? How did they come to know that? What's the evidence that supports those ideas? And how does science work as an enterprise? It's not just one person who says, this is true or this is false. It's a whole community of researchers that spend years processing data and information, and they come to a consensus, and that consensus formation is where the strength of science comes from. And that's something the public really needs to understand is how that knowledge is created.
How that knowledge is created and the nature, as you say, of scientific inquiry. How comfortable are teachers conveying scientific inquiry and taking science in these new directions?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge. Number one, these beginning teachers and current teachers have come through a system that hasn't taught them in that way. And so they've gone through their college courses learning in this very fact-based rote way. And not very many, some certainly, but not very many have direct firsthand experience engaging in research and doing research and really understand that. And yet policy documents and prescriptions encourage teachers then to help students understand what the scientific inquiry process is, but they themselves don't really understand what that is. Mm. And the result is they often simply just revert to textbook teaching and don't. There's all kinds of curriculum materials that have been developed over the years, beginning back in the 1950s and 60s. And these things that have tried to get teachers to focus on inquiry just end up sitting on the shelf and they're not used.
UW-Madison School of Education Professor John Rudolph with us as we examine how and why America teaches science in schools. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Hong is here from La Crosse. Hi, Hong. What would you like to add?
Yeah, first, I want to say thank you for taking my call. Somewhat, I feel like we couldn't approach everything from a real practical view. Yeah, I know practical is good. That's for our life. But if you completely view all the courses we teach at school, secondary or college, then it's not going to make sense because I have learned chemistry, biology, physics in high school. I never used them, and I forgot everything, and I scored high. I don't like them necessarily, but I was told to learn it, and I was a good kid. Now, when I recall that period, I feel like probably the more valuable part of learning all those things is the thinking skill, like what the author said. You can approach a certain area from a different view instead of just being always use your accustomed way of thinking because you don't like it, but you still have to approach it. That might be a good life skill. And on the other side, I also feel sometimes you never know whether you're going to really use this knowledge later, because even if you are memorizing all the knowledge facts, even at that time you understand probably one third of it. Mm. But later, if you really need to use it, retrieve it from your memory or approach it, you may suddenly feel, yeah, it makes sense. That's what happened to me. Although I'm never a science major person. I'm a retired teacher.
Yeah.
And then my student kept asking me, why do we need to learn this? Why do we need to learn that?
Hmm.
I couldn't explain because, yeah, you're not going to use it if you're not going to college. If you're going to be a cashier in the supermarket, which is a good job, no, you don't need to use it. Why do you need to learn it? I just feel like it's going to broaden your view.
Broaden your view, Hong. Thank you so much for those insights and calling in. John Rudolph, go ahead.
Yeah, what struck me from Hong's comment was how unpleasant she found her high school science courses. It's interesting to think that students are in these courses and just simply get turned off and have no desire to learn more science or think about science in their lives. And it's really important given all the challenges we have with clean water and climate change and global pandemics. I mean, the kind of understanding that we need is crucial. And it's not just the steps of the immune response. That's not the kind of thing that's gonna help us decide whether we should get vaccinated or not vaccinated. Understanding what the NIH is involved in and how that works, and trusting that they wouldn't develop and disseminate vaccines that would hurt the population is, and then giving confidence that we should get vaccinated because that's good for all of us. That's the kind of understanding and trust in science that we need.
John Rudolph, educator and author, newest book, Why We Teach Science and Why We Should. There's room to discuss your insights. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a different vision of what science education could look like in Wisconsin schools and across the nation, how coursework is falling short. Call in with a question. Bring your perspective on how science is taught. Number to join in is 800-642-1234. We have John Rudolph, Distinguished Professor of Science Education at UW-Madison School of Education. New book is called Why We Teach Science and Why We Should. Let's go to Dominic now in Madison. Hi, Dominic.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think it's a really important topic. The question I had is that I think one of the reasons that rote learning is maybe favored is because it's so easy to measure if you just know a fact or don't know a fact. So my question for your guest is, how would he recommend that we measure the type of more deeper learning that he's thinking that we should be teaching and that I agree we should be teaching?
Dominic, thank you. How do you give grades and measure competency, John?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's not terribly difficult. The kinds of standardized assessments we have right now are really low cognitive demand. In other words, it is just recall. Can you identify a correct answer, yes or no? And so you would need different kinds of assessments that get at sort of deeper understanding. And that is simply, it takes a little more effort, but you have to be able to ask questions that ask students to apply their knowledge in a novel situation, maybe a little mini case study where they have to give an interpretation of what's going on. It's just a different mindset from the assessment perspective. And so it does require effort. So the kind of shift that I'm talking about here isn't easy. We ended up with the traditional instruction we have because it's easy right now. It's easy for teachers. It's easy for students, at least the ones that are science focused, really like to the approach of tell me what you want me to memorize and I'll memorize the steps of the Krebs cycle. And so the shift to thinking about learning in a more meaningful way and expanding the curriculum to include things that aren't just the technical aspects of science is a huge challenge. And people have been trying to change science education for over 100 years, and we haven't been very successful at it. And so it's a big, big lift. And the caller is right to point out that it would be difficult in many ways.
What about in your classrooms with these emerging teachers that you are sending out into the world? How do you approach influencing their minds of aspiring science teachers and how science should be taught?
Well, we do a lot of, they read chapters of the book. We go through the ideas in the book. We go through all different kinds of readings and data. We look at the data that says, look, not most of your students aren't going to be STEM professionals. So even though you were all on the STEM profession track, how does that force you to rethink what you're going to do with your students? And so it's very discussion based. They practice developing assessments that are assessing students' deeper understanding. And we have very small class sizes. And part of the problem with that is there's class sizes are small because there's fewer and fewer people going into science education or teaching the profession generally.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that has to do with the larger political climate, the compensation models for teachers. I think that teachers don't feel valued and they're not compensated like they were, and there's been a teaching shortage in science, and so the solution at the state level was to change the certification requirements from having science teachers certified in subjects like physics and biology, chemistry, and then the most recent change has been let's just call the certification all science, and so that someone with a degree in biology, if they go through a teacher certification program, they end up with a license to teach any subject, even though they might not have a lot of expertise in physics. And so there's been this sort of de-skilling, a willingness to lower standards in order to say, well, we're not, we don't have as much of a teacher shortage anymore. And that's problematic. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, we heard Sean earlier talk about using algebra in roofing. Could your research apply to other areas like mathematics?
Well, mathematics is not my area of expertise, but I've watched my, I have two daughters who came up through the Madison schools, and math was a challenge for them. And it was something that they took, and I encouraged them to take. And it was mostly because the belief that, well, this is going to be important because you need to have this on your transcript when you apply to college, and they're going to expect that you've had advanced math courses. And so it was very much a credential mindset, and that's the world we live in. And so as a parent, I'm certainly not going to ignore that that reality exists. But in terms of the substance of what they learned and whether it was useful in their lives, I can't say that it was.
So what about the trust piece? What is the process to be able to, have science and have that democratic decision-making and that rebuilding the trust in the scientific community in our last moments here? What would you suggest?
Yeah, I think that the focus should be, if we're going to develop a curriculum, that a science curriculum is going to focus on building public trust, it should focus on understanding how scientists and the scientific community creates knowledge. What are the big ideas? Not what are all the ideas we need to remember, but what are the big ideas in each of the disciplines, like evolution through natural selection, the conservation of energy, these big guiding principles that are important in the various fields, and knowing how they developed. How did scientists develop and come up with these ideas? What's the evidence that they based their knowledge on? I think that's really important. And I also think that we should expand that to think about how does science work today in society? Like, how are research priorities determined? The public sits back and thinks that science just happens, but really it's the public through congressional committees and funding appropriations.
Through grants, yes.
That
set the direction.
What kind of research gets done.
John, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
John Rudolph, Vilas Distinguished Achievement Professor of Science Education at UW-Madison School of Education, author of Why We Teach Science and Why We Should. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.